जय जय श्री चैतन्य जय नित्यानंद जय द्वैत चंद्र जय गौर भक्त वृंद जय जय श्री चैतन्य जय नित्यानंद जय द्वैत चंद्र जय गौर भक्त वृंद श्री चैतन्य जय नित्यानंद जय द्वैत चंद्र जय गौर भक्त वृंद श्री चैतन्य चरितमृत माधव लीला चैप्टर 25 द रेजिडेंस ऑफ वाराणसी बिकम वैष्णवस टेक्स्ट 124-25-26 अमते प्रीतिशे प्रेम प्रजन कर्यधार द्वारे कहिता स्वरूप लक्षण Translation Supreme affection for me is called love of God, and that is the ultimate goal of life. Let me explain by a practical example the natural characteristic of such love. पंचभूतयाचे भूतेर भीतारे बाहिरे भक्तगाने स्फूर्यामि बाहिरे अंतारे The five material elements are existing inside and outside of every living entity. Similarly, I, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, am manifest within the heart of the devotee as well outside of his body. The pure devotee knows that he is a servant of Krishna eternally. He knows that everything can be used in the service of the Lord. 126 प्रविष्टानि अप्रविष्टानि तथा तेषु न तेषु अहम् यथा महन्ति भूतानि भूतेषु च वचिष्वनु प्रविष्टान्यप्रविष्टानि तथते सुनते स्वहम् यथा महान्ति भूतानि भूतेषु च वचिष्वनु प्रविष्टान्यप्रविष्टानि तथते सुनते स्वहम् यथा महान्ति भूतानि भूतेषु च वचिष्वनु प्रविशन्त्यप्रविष्टानि तथते सुनते स्वहम्
Thank you.
ladies.
Yathamahanti bhutani bhuteshu rakshasani aparishtani bhuteshu rakshasani
yathamahanti
as
mahanti,
mahanti
the universal
bhutani
elements Bhuteshu,
Bhuteshu,
in the living entities.
Uccha
avacheshu, both gigantic and minute. Anu, after.
Pravishtani,
situated internally. Apravishtani,
situated externally.
Tatha,
so.
Teshu,
in them.
Na,
not.
Teshu,
in them.
Aham,
I.
Translation. As the material elements enter the bodies of all living beings and yet remain outside them all, I exist within all material creations and yet am not within them. Purport. This is a quotation from Srimad Bhagavatam 2.9.35. It is also the third verse of Chaturshloki. For an explanation, see Adi Yoga chapter 1, text 55. So we read the purport for this verse of Adi Yoga, verse 55, which is the same verse. The gross material elements, earth, water, fire, air, and ether, combine with the subtle material elements, mind, intelligence, and false ego, to construct the bodies of this material world. And yet, they are beyond these bodies as well. Any material construction is nothing but an amalgamation or combination of material elements in the right proportions. These elements exist both within and beyond the body. For example, although the sky exists in space, it also enters within the bodies. Similarly, the Supreme Lord, who is the cause of material energy, lives within the material world as well as beyond it. Without his presence within the material world, the cosmic body could not develop. Just as without the presence of the spirit within the physical body, the body could not develop. The entire material manifestation develops and exists because the Supreme Personality of Godhead enters it as Paramatma, or the Super Soul. The Personality of Godhead, in his all-pervading feature of Paramatman, enters every entity from the biggest to the most minute. His existence can be realized by one who has the single qualification of submissiveness and who thereby becomes a surrendered soul. I repeat. His existence can be realized by one who has a single qualification of submissiveness and who thereby becomes a surrendered soul. The development of submissiveness is the cause of proportionate spiritual realization by which one can ultimately meet the Supreme Lord in person, as a man meets another man face to face. Because of his development of transcendental attachment for the Supreme Lord, the surrendered soul feels the presence of his beloved everywhere. And all his senses are engaged in the loving service of the Lord. His eyes are engaged in seeing the beautiful couple of Sri Radha and Krishna sitting on a decorated throne beneath the desire tree in the transcendental land of Vrindavan. His nose is engaged in smelling the spiritual aroma of the lotus feet of the Lord. Similarly, his ears are engaged in hearing messages from Vaikuntha, and his hands embrace the lotus feet of the Lord and his associates. Thus, the Lord is manifested to a pure devotee from within and without. This is one of the mysteries of devotional relationship, in which a devotee and the Lord are bound by the tie of spontaneous love. To achieve this love should be the goal of life for every living being. Śrīla Prabhupāda ki jaya. Yathā mahānti bhūtani bhūteṣu ca vacheṣvanu pravishtanya pravishtani tathā teṣu mateṣvaham. As material elements enter the bodies of all living beings and yet remain outside of them, I exist within all material creations and yet I am not within them. Namo Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prasthaya Bhutale Srimati Bhakti Vedanta Swami Kinamine Namaste Saraswati Devi Gauravani Pracharine Nirvishaya Shishunya Vali Paschatari Shatari Vancha Kaupataru Vishcha Kripa Sindhu Vyavacha Patitanam Bhavani Vyo Vaishya Vyo Namo Ma Jai Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nitananda Sri Advaita Gadadhara Shivasari Gauru Bhakti Vrinda Hare Krishna, 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 Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Rama, Hare Hare. So, Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu answers the question of Prakashananda Saraswati. In this particular conversation between Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and Prakashananda Saraswati, already Mahaprabhu has smashed the Mayavad philosophy. Before that, he already explained that the meanings of Vedanta Sutra, which was given by Shankaracharya, is misconstrued. It's a completely forced meaning that Shankaracharya is taking Lakshanavriti and without explaining the direct meaning of the sutra, he is using this Lakshanavriti to more or less forcibly propound his philosophy of monism, of Advaita. And after this explanation, Prakashananda Saraswati being totally convinced that Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is Lord himself, approaches him again. And he says, "You're the Supreme Lord. Why don't you again, more consistently, from the very beginning till the very end, explain Vedanta Sutra? Because the main meaning of the practice of Mayavadi Sannyasis is to try to understand and meditate on the meaning of Vedanta Sutra. Ultimately, Vedanta Sutra, as Nyaya Prasthan, in a very logical and systematical manner, explains the meaning of the Vedas, or Upanishads. It takes the teachings of Upanishads, which is more or less poetically and non-systematically reveals the truths and brings about a system within this Upanishads and explains the teachings of Upanishads in a very logical manner. And for that, this course of Vedanta Sutra there. So Prakashananda Saraswati is hankering to grasp the complete meaning. Because before that, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu just was refuting the arguments of Mayavadis. He was not interested in explaining the complete body of Vedanta Sutra. He was just giving the arguments against their interpretation of Vedanta Sutra. So, Prakashananda Saraswati wants to know the complete explanation. And what Lord Chaitanya answers, he says, "I'm just a tiny jiva. How can a tiny jiva with a tiny brain understand Gambira, a very deep and confidential meaning of the sutras? Because the sutras are written by Bhagavan himself. Vyasadeva is the literary incarnation of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And he has very, very deep meaning inside. How one can understand this? No way." He said, "My brain is not big enough to understand this." Because this is a code. This is not a very direct or implicit explanation. It's a very codified and more or less confidential explanation of this system. But then he says, luckily for us, fortunately, Bhagavan himself, Vyasadeva himself, explained Vedanta Sutra in a way that is accessible to us. And this is Srimad Bhagavatam. So instead of explaining to Prakashananda Sarasvati and the system of Vedanta Sutra, which is kind of dry, which is really dry, which is not kind of dry, it is dry. It's so dry. And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu really doesn't want to explain this. It's too dry for him. He says, Vyasadeva himself, he wrote the explanation. Why should you go to Vedanta Sutra? You know, you cannot understand this. And Vyasadeva himself, after meeting with his spiritual master, Narada Muni, could understand that this is a big mistake. This is a big mistake to try to catch people for this kind of intellectual glowing, brilliant explanations. Basically, and that's interesting, this is an interesting point, why Chaitanya Mahaprabhu does not want to explain Vedanta Sutra. Because Vedanta Sutra, there is a trick there. There is some kind of catch in Vedanta Sutra, which is basically how Mayavadi Sannyasi are being fooled. And all the Mayavadis are fooling the whole world. It gives a very, very intellectual thing. It's very intellectual. But then the temptation is to take intellectuality to be the spirituality. The Mayavadis, they take, you know, they equate being intellectual to be spiritual. Or to practice intellectualism, to practice spiritual life. Which is not the same. So there is a kind of subtle exchange is going on. And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu does not want this. He doesn't want to trap people into this trap. Because Vyasadeva himself was morose. Vyasadeva himself didn't feel satisfied because there was this subtle kind of exchange, or how do you say this, subtle substitute. When you don't give the direct meaning of spiritual life, and instead of giving the direct meaning of spiritual life, you give a kind of intellectual, you know, understanding or intellectual image of spirituality. So he goes directly to Srimad Bhagavatam and he claims very strongly that Srimad Bhagavatam is the real explanation of Vedanta Sutra. If you want to keep the complete system of Vedanta Sutra, you have to know the complete system of Srimad Bhagavatam. What is Srimad Bhagavatam all about? And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, while explaining Srimad Bhagavatam, because of course Srimad Bhagavatam is big, how you can explain it in gist? So he takes the Chatushloki and he says, the whole Srimad Bhagavatam, the whole essence of Srimad Bhagavatam, the philosophy of Srimad Bhagavatam is there in these four verses. And if you understand these four verses, that's enough. You will understand Vedanta Sutra, you will understand Srimad Bhagavatam, and you will understand the meaning of life, which is the most important and essential. So he starts explaining the verses of Chatushloki. Again, in a very brief manner. Because he says, these verses do not require elaborate explanation. It's simple. It's already explanation. It doesn't require something very elaborate. Just take the direct meaning of these verses and you will understand everything. But then Chaitanya Mahaprabhu brings about a system of understanding these four slokas, which is, again, very important. Otherwise, you read these four slokas and you cannot figure it out. What is this? What is it all about? Ahamavasamevagre, you know, I was before that. Or you take it in a very superficial manner. So, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, it's again amazing, it's so brilliant. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he explains these four verses in a very short manner, but at the same time, it reveals a complete depth of the meaning of these four verses. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu says that if you want to understand any text, there is a system for this. This system is called hermeneutic or whatever. And And this system, according to the Vedic tradition, you have to understand, understanding the text, you have to understand three terms: Sambandha, Nideya, and Prayojana. And of course, we have heard this so many times. But sometimes we don't understand what it really means. Originally, these terms which Mahaprabhu uses for the explanation of the Vedas and for explanation of the practice of spiritual life is the terms which are used by the scholars to explain any text. And Sambandha, Vachya Vachita Sambandha, means to explain the underlying or unifying principle of the text. Any text, it doesn't matter, Srimad Bhagavatam or not Srimad Bhagavatam, Vedas or not Vedas. Any, you know, if the text is somewhat sensible, of course nowadays there are so many texts which are not sensible, but if the text has a coherent meaning, the first point which you have to understand is this unifying principle of Sambandha. Sambandha basically is the underlying or unifying principle, the principle of connection. How everything is connected, by which principle, by which one tattva or one category, everything becomes coherent. Because when you read the text, especially if it's a sacred text, there are so many different things there. And you know, after a few verses you get totally bewildered. What is it all about? So if you want to understand the meaning, the first point which you have to understand, what is bringing all the parts of this text together? What is this one thing which makes it a complete and unified whole? So this is Sambandha. And Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he uses this again and again and again for us to bring about the deepest meaning of the sacred text. He says, Bhagavan Sambandha. If you want to understand Sambandha, Sambandha in the text and Sambandha in the broader sense, because when Chaitanya Mahaprabhu explains this, he brings it to another dimension. He gives the ontological dimension to these terms, and he says, Sambandha is originally coming from the understanding of the text, but ultimately, you have to understand Sambandha to understand the meaning of life. If you want to understand how to live, and what is the meaning of life, then you have to understand what is the unifying. If you want to understand this world, if you want to understand how to relate to this world, if you want to understand what is your position in life and your place in this world, and how to act accordingly, because if you don't act according to your proper position, then you will not be able to really fulfill the mission, and you will not be happy. So if you want to understand this, you have to understand the unifying principle of this world. The one principle which is more or less bringing everything together. Like Lord Krishna himself said, that this whole world is like the pearls strung on the string. The pearls which is on the string. So Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he gives this explanation to the Vedas and to the meanings of the Vedas, and he says, Bhagavan Sambandha not only for the Vedas, but for you, for the life. It's also interesting when Sanatana Goswami approaches Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and he asks this famous question, Kyani, Kani Amoy, Jarita Patrol. And he says, who am I and why am I suffering? And then he says, if I don't know this, I cannot really live happily in this world. If I don't know this simple question, who I am and why I suffer, I will not be able to bring about the auspiciousness in my life. I will suffer continuously. And while explaining this, while answering this question, Lord Chaitanya says, Bhagavan Sambandha. So he says that this is the first question which every one of us has to ask. Who am I and why do I suffer? What do I do wrong? Because if I suffer, it means that I do something wrong. It doesn't mean that something wrong with the world. It means that I do something wrong. The world is harmonious. So the answer of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu to this is very unusual. It basically says, Bhagavan Sambandha. To understand who you are and to understand your place in this creation, and to understand what is the logical consequences of your position in the creation, and how you should act. You have to understand that there is Bhagavan. And Lord Chaitanya explaining this in relationship to Srimad Bhagavatam, he says that the first verse of Chatushloki and the second verse of Chatushloki is the explanation of Sambandha. Aham evasam evagre, when the Lord Krishna, explaining this to Brahma, says, I was before the creation. I am maintaining this when the creation is there, and I will be after the destruction. And he says again, aham, 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 three times. And before it was explained that when it is said that the Lord explains aham, 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 while explaining Sambandha, which is the most basic and the most fundamental understanding which we have to get, he means to say that this ahankar, the ego, is the inherent quality of the Lord. It's an important question, and even though it's not directly related to this particular topic of this course, I still will try to explain a little bit about this, because this is the basic and the most fundamental difference between our philosophy and philosophy of Mayavadis. Mayavadis, they say there is spirit, there is Brahman, and we say there is spirit, there is Brahman. But the difference is that they say that this Brahman does not have ego. And we say, Brahman is there, but he has ego. And this ego of aham remains. And that's exactly what is being stated in this foundational verse of Srimad Bhagavatam. When the Lord explaining who he is, three times repeats, aham. Aham means that I am an individuality, and it means that this asmadartha, that I always feel as an individual living being. And it also means, as a consequence of this, that I can relate to the world and I can know the world. But first I know that I exist. This basically ego means that I exist. And this ego remains in any stage of life. In a conditioned stage of life, we have ego, but it's false ego. This is the false identity. But in liberated state of life, the ego is still there. Aham is still there. And aham means, you know, I remain individual living being in any stage of life. This is my basic nature. So that's the foundation which we have to understand. The Lord has ego and I have ego. And it means that everything else more or less follows from this. Everything else is more or less the logical consequences of this, if we have some brain to understand this. Unfortunately, we don't. But basically, that's what it is. Basically, this one verse is enough. But then, the second verse is also explaining Sambandha, where he says that Maya, which you see, and which is so glowing and so alluring and so beautiful, you know, when you see all these trees blooming. He said, it's also me, because it's my energy. And this way, the Lord explains Sambandha, that everything which you see is the Lord. It's either the Lord himself with his aham, with his ego, the individuality of the Lord, the person of the Lord, whom we see on the altar. That's him. He has the form, he has ego, he has desire, he has everything, because he has ego. You know, that he has activities. When Mayavadis say that the Lord doesn't have ego, it means that he doesn't have form, it means that he doesn't have activities, it means he doesn't have desire. Basically, he doesn't have anything. He's just, you know, he's just there, you know. But it doesn't mean anything either. So when they say that there is Brahman, which is just consciousness without ego, it basically means nothing. And therefore, Lord Chaitanya said that this is crypto Buddhism, and this is covered Buddhism, Gupta or whatever Buddhism, and this is, and just, you know, Shunya. To say that there is no ego means that there is, basically, it's tantamount to say that there is no God. It's just some kind of pseudo-explanation of reality. But the Lord gives the complete picture of reality. He says, there is Aham, myself, in the real form, in this form of personality. And then there is energy of mind, which is also me. And therefore, the next explanation which is there, this is two verses which explain Sambandha. And then Abhideya goes. And Abhideya means the meaning, or the essence of the meaning. And Abhideya is, of course, devotional service. And then Prayojana is the goal. It's all originally related to the text, but then it is brought by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu right into our life. He says, first you have to understand that there is Bhagavan, which is Sambandha, which is the unifying principle. And you are somewhere there too, because you are a part of Him. Usually we can accept that there is Bhagavan only in relationship to myself. You know, I'm the unifying principle of the universe. By me, the whole universe is being sustained. But we are also there in this Bhagavan. Because when we say Bhagavan, it means also us. We are part of Him. We are a little part of Him. But it's very essential and important to understand that there is this Vibhu Chaitanya, or Vibhu Sambhit, the huge consciousness, and there is Anu Sambhit, us, little particles of consciousness, which contains the complete whole. But then, from this, the logical consequence, or the logical conclusion from this, is that Bhakti Abhideya means the meaning of life is to serve. The meaning of life is to act. Because since we have ego, it means we will have two things. Shishi Radha Gopala Nanda Gita, Shishi Sitaram Lakshman Hanuman Gita. It is explained by our acharyas. And basically this is the standard explanation of Vedic philosophy. That if you have ego, ego means basically two things. Harta and Bhokta. It means that you are doer and you are enjoyer. Ego means two things. You want to act. You want to do something and you want to enjoy, or you want to experience something. You want to know something. Because enjoyment means to experience something. To know something. So, and if Bhagavan is the Sambandha, is the essence of this creation, then the logical consequence is that He will act and He will enjoy. And because I also have the same kind of nature, I also have ego, I will also act and I will also enjoy. But Bhakti Abhideya means that I should enjoy and I should act in cooperation with the Lord. This is a brilliant explanation by Srila Prabhupada. He says that this enjoyership and doership is inherent for all living beings. And everyone is doing this. Liberated person, non-liberated person. Everyone is enjoying. Everyone wants to enjoy and everyone wants to act. The difference and the mistake which the conditioned souls like us do is that they're trying to do it independently. There is no problem. There is no... There is nothing wrong in acting and there is nothing wrong in enjoying. It's just you have to do it in a dependent condition of the Lord. You have to do it in cooperation with the Lord. You are not independent because you are not. That's a bad news, but that's the reality. We are not. We are not independent. And because we are Anu, because we are so small and tiny, we have to do what we are supposed to do, or act and enjoy, but in connection and in cooperation with the Lord. And that's basically bhakti. Bhakti means you try to do whatever you do, but try to connect whatever you do with the very forceful presence of the Lord. And then prema prayojana, this third verse which we will read, and which we don't have time to explain basically, is that The third verse, or this is the third verse of Chatusloki, because Abhidheya is explained in the first verse. But the third verse of Chatusloki of Srimad Bhagavatam is explaining the state of consciousness which you will reach by being engaged in bhakti. What is the final goal of living being? What is the reward of being engaged in devotional service? What is the vision which you will have when this final goal will be realized? Prayojana. And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu explaining how the Lord Himself explains this to Lord Brahma. And Lord Brahma has a big brain. Lord Brahma has four brains. He has a big advantage. You know, basically, his whole body is one brain because he's very subtle. His body is consistent of intelligence, of buddhi. So for him, it's not difficult. Well, the Lord tells him four verses and he's totally enlightened. You know, these four verses, for him, were enough to create this whole universe. You know, he got so much inspiration for devotional service. He said, yes, I know. Now I know everything. But for us, it's a little difficult. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is explaining what it means. And he said, the Lord, while explaining to Brahma, this fourth verse, not the fourth verse, the third verse, but which is the fourth category, third category, prayojana, the goal of life, he says, I'll give you practical meaning. I'll give you simple meaning by which you can understand everything. And he gives this simple meaning by which you cannot understand anything. He says, how to understand this prayojana? And if we really analyze what the Lord says, it's amazing. You know, because sometimes we think, you know, prayojana, yes, love. And there are so many cheap explanations of love. You know, everyone is using love, that ultimately nobody knows what love is. So, the Lord gives an amazing explanation of what love is, which is unique, which nobody knows, because nobody has love. And therefore, when they say love, it's not love, it's love. It's just some joke. You know, they say, oh, I'm sending you my love. What it means doesn't mean anything. But I'm sending you my love. This is just all kind of Mayavad. because basically the whole system is meaningless. Because ultimately they start from denying the existence of the Lord. By denying the existence of figure of the Lord, individuality of the Lord, they basically deny the existence of the Lord. And because they deny the existence of the Lord, they deny the existence of everything else. And then even when they speak about love, basically they deny the existence of love. It becomes totally cheap, meaningless thing. But here the Lord gives a very profound, a very amazing and very unique explanation of what love is. He says, love is very simple, he says. It's very simple, yeah, very simple. Yeah, we know, it's very simple. He says, the love means that you see that I am everywhere. That's what love is. And not only just see, because sometimes when we say see, it again doesn't mean anything. We really have to experience it. The love means the prayojana, the state of consciousness which is supposed to be reached by the practice of devotional service, through the understanding of Sambandha or the underlying principle of creation, is that you will ultimately understand that the Lord is everywhere, He is within and without. And not only understand theoretically we know this, yes, He is everywhere. But then you don't really see it. Where is He? You know, we only see bhed. We only see difference. In our practical reality, the practical experience, we only see bheda. Of course, theoretically we say bheda, yes. But it's all bheda, you know. Where is the Lord? We say, the holy name is non-different from the Lord. How is that? I don't know. But they say it's not different. You know, they say that holy image of the Lord, the lekya, the murti of the Lord, is not different. How is that? Well, I don't know. It's from marble. From Italian marble. Something like this. How is that? How is that not different? And not only this, you know, you have to see that everyone is the part and parcel of the Lord. You have to see Him everywhere. You have to experience Him everywhere. And this is not our practical reality. Why? The answer is simple. Because we don't have love. When we have love, it means, to have love means to see. To have love means not just to see, to experience this. And to have this feeling that this is the Lord, this is the only object of my love, who is everywhere. And he says, yeah, you first have to understand that theoretically. That's fine. First we have to get this, you know, little ethereal or little kind of theoretical, not practical meaning of this. But ultimately, this is not enough to have this theoretical understanding. Ultimately, we have to know that He is everywhere. It's very interesting that in his explanations of Vedanta Sutra, in the first four Vedanta Sutras, which are sutras of Vedanta Sutra, which are again foundational for the whole world, Ramanuja Acharya gives a very elaborate explanation of these four sutras, and he gives a definition of bhakti there, because ultimately. The Vaishnava Acharyas, they have to find bhakti in Vedanta Sutra, which is not so easy. And that's again the reason why Chaitanya Mahaprabhu didn't want to explain Vedanta Sutra, because it's so dry. It's just, you know, to find bhakti there is very difficult, because it's all just intellectual, nyaya. So, but Ramanuja Acharya, he explains bhakti, explains these four sutras of Vedanta Sutra, and he explains the meaning of bhakti. And to give us the understanding of what bhakti is, he quotes the verse from Ramayana. And in this verse of Ramayana, this verse is actually belongs to a demon, Marichi demon. To explain what bhakti is, he quotes Marichi. Because he has realized the deepest meaning of bhakti. And this verse of Marichi, in this verse he says, this is in his conversation with Ravana. Marichi was the demon, he could turn his shape, you know, he could change his shape. So when Vishvamitra Muni took Lord Ram to the excursion to the forest with Lakshmana, so he said, there are some demons and they're disturbing. And I don't want to, you know, waste my brahminical power from killing these demons. Please take care of them. You can do it. And I will teach you how to do this. But I want to do my business. I will do these sacrifices. And these demons are coming and they're, you know, pulling blood and pulling bones and destroying everything and, you know, making mischief and devouring the sages. Not good people, so please take care of them. So. So the Marichi flew with Subahu, the other demon, Subahu, the two demons, they flew, and Lord Ram saw them and they started doing this mischief. And Lord Ram, they just threw some blade of grass. And this blade, just little blade of grass, didn't chant any mantras, they just threw a blade of grass. So one demon was killed on the spot with Subahu, and Marichi, just this grass just hit him, and he just flew all the way back to the ocean and landed on some island, you know, and became dizzy, got a complete shock, some kind of, you know, brain percussion or whatever, and from just one blade of grass. So, and well, that was enough. That was a very profound experience in bhakti for him. He encountered the Lord. He encountered the power and the might of the Lord Supreme by little, you know, hit or stroke of this blade of grass. And ever since, he became very saintly. This is basically why people become saintly persons. When they got a big blow on the head. That's the only reason. Otherwise, we will not do it. Otherwise, what is the use? Otherwise, we will just enjoy. So he became very saintly. He became a saintly demon, and he started chanting japa and, you know, performing austerities and following chaturmasya and living in a very simple life and praying all the time, and, you know, all the time remembering how the blade of grass pushed him in the middle of the ocean. And at one point, unfortunately, or maybe fortunately for him, Ravana came, and Ravana said, "You're a good demon. You're a good friend of mine, and you're very expert in taking different shapes. Please, you know, allure Lord Ram from his little cottage by taking the shape of a golden deer." And Maharishi said, "You don't know what that is. Who told you this stupid idea?" "I know who he is." "You know, really, don't deal with him. You know, there will be nothing good for you. Look at me. I had to become a saint because of the experience with him. You want to do the same?" "You know, I just had a little encounter with the Lord. Now I'm chanting all the time, fasting all the time, you know, all my life is spoiled because of this. Please don't do it." So he was trying to dissuade Ravana from this idea. And then at that moment he said, "Ever since I met with the Lord, ever since he hit me on the head, I see him everywhere. And I'm so afraid of him. I look at the tree and I say, this must be Ram. You know, and he must be hiding there. And I see him and he's there. You know, and I chant, Ram, Hari Ram, Ram, Ram. He's everywhere. He's there. Look, he's there. He knows what it is." And Ramanujacharya, he quotes this funny verse to explain what bhakti is. Because this is what bhakti is. The bhakti is how the Lord himself, Lord Krishna himself, explained to Brahman. The bhakti is this amazing darshan of the Lord everywhere. And of course, Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he will explain it later. He will quote the 11th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, but the same thing is explained. When the Uttamadhikari, the explanation of Uttamadhikari, when you reach the perfection of your bhakti, it means that you see Bhagavan everywhere. And not just theoretically know that he is everywhere, but you see him. And Srila Prabhupada, he is explaining that this is this experience is to the extent of your submissiveness. He explains why we don't see him. Because we may ask, you know, if he is everywhere, why we don't see him? And even if we see him in person there, we still don't feel that this is God. And even if we chant his holy name, which is no different from him, we still only see Bheda. We only see Bheda. Basically, what it is, and if I can speak for a few more minutes, I know that I have to finish soon. Who is the chief here? Who's in charge here?
You're in charge.
So, basically, this darshan which the Lord is talking about here in this verse of Chatushloki is the darshan of real abheda, or real non-difference, or unity of the creation with the Lord, which has to come to us as the real experience. And this non-veda, this abheda, non-difference, or unity with the creation, is the real understanding of implicit presence of the Lord within the creation. The example is given, the usual example of understanding of abheda is that if you take an object, and if you take the quality of this object, even though you speak about the object itself and the quality of the object as something different, in reality you don't see the difference. When you say lotus, when you say blue lotus, Then there is lotus and there is blueness, the quality of lotus being blue. But even though intellectually you understand that there is blueness itself, the quality of being blue, and the lotus itself, but it's inseparable. So this is what we have to see. This is the darshan which we have to have of this world. When we see that even though we speak about the difference, in reality it's one. But our present darshan, our present vision of the Lord is totally contrary. We only theoretically understand that there is oneness with the Lord. But we only see bheda, we only see difference. You know, we theoretically say that all the living beings are parts and parcels of the Lord. But when it comes to our practical dealing with this, we say you're a rascal and you're a fool. And it means you're not the part and parcel of the Lord. Because how you can say this about the part and parcel of the Lord? So what happens now in our practical vision, we see only the difference. But the pure devotee, in his practical vision, he only sees non-difference. And he theoretically understands that there is some difference, but in reality he sees the unity. So, and that means love. That means prayojana. That's the highest achievement or highest darshana. When you see the Lord everywhere and you see that He is there. And therefore, you don't despise anything, you don't really criticize anyone, you don't, you know, you don't use anything outside of devotional service, you use everything in the context of devotional service, because this is all Lord, and you know this. Not theoretically, you know that this belongs to the Lord, because you see Him there. He's there, everywhere. It is in the Adi Lila of Chaitanya Charitamrita, Krishnadas Kaviraj, he explains the meaning of Srimati Radharani's name, Krishnamayi, which means that she is made of Krishna. Basically, literally it means, Krishnamayi means that she is made of Krishna. There is nothing else but Krishna. So, and he explains what it means. It means, he says, it means that whenever she, Srimati Radharani, who is the epitome of devotion, who is the, you know, the highest principle of devotion, highest manifestation of devotion, Ahladini Shakti herself. Whenever she looks, whenever she puts her eye, she sees the Lord. And not only, it says, Spuri, the Lord manifests Himself. She more or less, by the power of her love, forces the Lord to manifest in person by looking in something which is apparently, or in our vision, different from the Lord. She looks in this microphone and she doesn't see the microphone. But the Lord is forced to come out from the microphone. And I say, oh yeah, really, that's you. Now I understand what it is. You know, there is this famous story when Krishna wanted to hide from the gopis. And you know how he can hide? He has a very strong smell, this aguru smell. And even if he tries to hide, they're playing this game, you know, seek and hide. So he was trying to hide, but he couldn't because the smell is too strong, you know. And they can just, by smelling, to find him. So, so he decided to change his form. He decided, let me become the four-armed Narayana. Yeah, and he took this opulent Aishwarya form, his forearms, and he was sitting there and thinking, you know, how nicely I hit myself, you know, now they will not find me. So the gopis are passing by, they say, oh, Narayana, we are looking for Krishna. Did you see him? He said, oh, yeah, he's somewhere there. But then it is said that when Srimati Radharani comes, you know, and looks at him, he cannot hide anywhere. His two arms are fall down and only two remains. Because again, Spurti, he's coming out because of the power of your darshan. You know, when she sees, when she looks, and this is what prema means when you have this Premanjana Charita Bhakti Vilochanena, when you have this eyes of love and you look at something because of this eyes of love, the Lord is more or less forced to come out and to come out from his hiding. He was hiding, he's hiding behind. He is everywhere. He is, you know, he's Vishnu. Vishnu means Vishate, he entered. It is said here specifically that pravishanti and pravishtani and apravishtani. I entered and I didn't enter. So I entered everywhere, I am everywhere, and when somebody who has the love looks into this creation, the Lord has entered, the Lord comes out. And he sees, yes, this is the Lord. And this is the power of love, and this is the prayojana, the highest state of consciousness, which is being developed according to the extent of our submissiveness, as Prabhupada is explaining. The reason why we don't see is because we remain rebellious. We insist very stubbornly on our independence. I want to act, and I want to enjoy, but I want to do it without you. And if you really force me to do it, yes, I'll do it. If you're really so cruel, okay, I will chant my 16 rounds. Such an austerity. But if we develop this submissiveness as the natural state of consciousness, being this tiny little totally dependent living beings, then ultimately this vision will come, this love will come. And the most amazing thing, as Prabhupada explains also, he is explaining very beautifully this, he's explaining in this purport, how one can see the Lord everywhere, in all the material elements and everywhere, but still one feels viraha, the separation. When Srimati Radharani looks and anywhere, she sees Krishna coming. And it means there is no separation, but there is separation. And this is achintya. This is what achintya beda beda means. Achintya means that you see the Lord everywhere, and still you feel the viraha, the separation. Still you feel. It is said that in separation, how it goes, tanmaya. Virahi tanmaya jagat. In separation, which is the highest state of consciousness of prayojana, virahi, when you are in this state of separation, tanmaya jagat, you see that jagat, the world, is made of him, tanmaya. You see the Lord everywhere, and still you feel the complete, total separation with the Lord, and you cry in this separation, and you look for him, and you're still looking, and therefore the fourth verse of this chapter Shloki says, explains the practice of bhakti, but also explains the state of highest possible consciousness. And even if you achieve this prayojana, you're still doing something for the Lord, you're still looking for him, you're still serving him everywhere, and you're still looking, where is the Lord, where is he? I want to serve him because this is the only meaning of life. So that's basically the explanation of this third verse of Chatushloki which Prabhupada gives to us, and how we should understand the goal of our practice, what prema is. When we practice devotional service, the ultimate state which we have to reach by this practice of devotional service is this state of complete submissiveness to the Lord, in which we will be able to feel and experience His presence every second of our life. Thank you very much. I don't know if I have time for questions or not.
In the verse, third verse, which the Prabhupada says in the purport, this mystery is transcendental love of Godhead, and one who is so charged with such transcendental love of Godhead can without difficulty see the personality of Godhead in every atom and every movable or immovable object. At the same time, he can see the personality of Godhead in his own abode and so on. And you explained that very nicely. And another part later on in the purport, he says, Srila Prabhupada says, as a touchstone is rarely found, a pure devotee of the Lord is also rarely found, even among millions of liberated souls. Kutishvati Mahamune. Earlier, in your talk near the beginning, you were saying that the Mayavadis, they confuse intellectual activity with spiritual activity. My question is, owing to a Vaishnava, any given Vaishnava, not having the highest expression of love for Krishna, does the Vaishnava also perhaps confuse intellectual activity with spiritual activity?
Yeah, this is a trap. This is when we do confuse, and sometimes it happens. It means that we become some of Mayavadis. When we substitute the spiritual activity, which is the activity of love, which is this highest state of devotional, of this expression of devotion, when we want to serve the object of our love, when we confuse it with a kind of intellectual game, when we think that the devotional service is, you know, taking place in the mind, and it's only kind of game, when we're not ready to sacrifice, because devotional service basically means this readiness to sacrifice everything for the sake of the Lord, to give our life to the Lord, then it means that we become Mayavadi, or we kind of give this Mayavadi interpretation of what bhakti is. Therefore, when Prabhupada explains the bhakti, he says it comes from the root bhaj, which implies the active engagement in some service. And Prabhupada says this, that this is what it is, that the pure devotee, at the end of the purport there, he says that the pure devotee is active in his expression of love, he's clinging or embracing the lotus feet of the Lord and the Lord's devotees, and smelling the smell of aroma of this. And when Mayavad says love, they say, you know, it again means nothing. It doesn't mean that you have to do something. I'm sending you my love. Here I am. Please take my love, and I will sit here. And we're all nice. So that's what it is. We can confuse intellectualism with devotional service. And when it becomes empty mental game, this is my life.
Maharaj, my understanding, my attraction to Krishna is mostly intellectual. It's logical in a perfect sense to me. I was very mathematical when I was a child in school, weighing and legal questions and so on. Really appealing to make a lot of sense to me. How can I actually develop it?
Well, this is the beginning. This is good. This is a good start. Because you employ and use your intellectual capacity in the service of the Lord by trying to understand Him. But ultimately, what we should not do, we should not compromise the goal. The goal is this complete, overwhelming love, which Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is a manifestation of. But to understand intellectually from this point of view, it's a good start. It's a very good start. And in fact, this is an ongoing practice which we have to do, because by trying to understand the logic, like Rupa Goswami explains this in Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, he says that the strength of your Shraddha, of your faith in the Lord, which ultimately will bring you to His lotus feet, which ultimately will force us to surrender to the lotus feet of the Lord, very much depends on our Shastra Yukti, of how we understand the scriptural logic. Because literally it means, Shastra Yukti means logic of the scriptures. And proportionately, understanding the logic of the scriptures, the logical system of the scriptures, we will be convinced, we will have no doubts, and because we have no doubts, without reservation, we will devote ourselves to the practice of devotional service, which ultimately will bring about this very elevated state of surrender to the lotus feet of the Supreme Lord. So there is nothing wrong with it. But we should not confuse it. We shouldn't say that this is it. This is the ultimate goal. The ultimate goal is this prema prayojana, when we are totally immersed in the vision of the Supreme Lord. But this is a good start. This is a good ongoing practice. Okay. Thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada ki jai, 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 Srila Prabhupada ki jai,